The next step for me is self-responsibility and understanding that I have some control over my life, though not complete control, and there are things I can do or not do that make me a healthier person. And over the last few years, since I've even heard of the idea of taking care of myself, I've done a lot of exploring and seeing what that means for me, which is really what it's about, is each of us looking at ourselves as individuals and as the expert on ourselves, more so than anyone else. Some other people have some ideas, too, about what self-care is, and this book is called The Wellness Workbook. I'm going to talk about some other books later. It's a really, really wonderful book. It is a workbook, and it takes you through various areas of your life that can affect your health, breathing, communicating, eating, playing, sexuality, finding meaning, all those kinds of things. And the very first chapter is called Self-Responsibility and Love. And I really like those two things together, because I think it's so easy when we start to talk about what's becoming sort of a popular term, medical self-care, our health self-care, to think that if we get a terrible cold, like I had 2 weeks ago, that we've somehow messed up and somehow haven't been sensitive enough or responsible enough or something like that. And so it has to be a balance of self-responsibility and love and acceptance of our own limitations and our own humanness. The authors of this book, who are both very well known in the wellness field, Sarah Ryan and John Travis, who is a doctor, talk a lot about the balance between self-responsibility and love. What they say self-responsibility means is looking into ourselves and seeing what we find there. Jeff talked a little bit about that in the quotes that Jeff read in Vespers last night, talked about that too. Looking inside of ourselves, finding what's there, finding out who we are and what we are as individuals and how we are just ourselves and different from other people. And then realizing that no one else can do that but us. No one else can tell us what we need except for us. Other people can help us. Other people can have more information about specific areas, but no one can know us like we can know ourselves. And so the authors of this book talk about, first of all, looking inside ourselves and realizing our own uniqueness, and then going from that point and making choices about our lives. Most of what we need to do for ourselves to be healthy are things that we already know. Most of the things we need to do for ourselves are what we might call common sense, or might be what our grandmothers always said. Might be things that we know intuitively, but we've avoided or we've forgotten about. I've learned from my experience as a nurse, when I have to talk with someone about what's bothering them, what their problem is, I've learned finally, after a long time and a lot of mistakes, to ask all the questions I can think of, and then wait a few minutes and say, "What do you think it is?" And it almost always works. It almost always works. When I have no idea or I'm really confused, the person somehow just pulls it out. But most people don't stop to think that they know the answer. And it helps the patient for me to ask all those questions, because it starts to get thoughts rolling and starts to get thoughts organized. But really what it comes down to is, what do you think is wrong? And then, what do you think will help? And sometimes it's a real surprise, both to me and to the patient, what the answer to those questions are. But I always have to remind myself to keep doing that, because it's the best technique that I've found so far. I want to talk a little bit about health and what health means and what just that concept involves, so that, you know, we can understand why it's so important for us to be the experts of our own health. Now for my first visual aid. This is the ocean where I just was on vacation. And this is the tip of an iceberg.
That's trying to make us jealous.
This,
yeah, I am.
Where are you on the beach? I'm over here in my new swimming suit. This is the part of our health that we can see. This is the tip of the iceberg. This is what we can see when we look in the mirror in the morning. This is what I can see when I look at all of you. I can tell if your faces are tired, if your eyes are bloodshot, if you have pink cheeks, if you're look, you know, like you're going to go out and jog this afternoon, or you're feeling energetic, or whatever. This is the part that when you go for a physical, a checkup at the doctor's, that the doctor can see. Listen to your heart and check your blood pressure, all those kinds of things. Check your reflexes. And this is the part that we usually pay the most attention to because it's so obvious. Just like with an iceberg, this is the part that gets noticed because it's the part that's above the water. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, there's this huge, huge iceberg, the bottom of the iceberg, which makes up the whole part of our health. This is what we call health, because we can see it. Under here we have our behaviors, also known as lifestyle. We have our emotions. The book calls it psychological chaos, but I think emotions makes more sense to me. And we also have our view of the world, or our philosophy of life. Now, if you walk into a doctor's office or a nurse's office or whatever, the health practitioner sees this right away, or maybe does a little more investigating about this part of your health. But maybe doesn't know about this part, or this part, or this part. You know about this part, but you might not even know about these parts either. And yet, when we're talking about our health, and how we're feeling, and how we're getting along in life, we're talking about the whole iceberg, not just the obvious part that sticks out of the water. The only person who can know about this part of your iceberg is yourself. You know, other health practitioners and other friends and family can see this, but you're the only one who can really be the expert on this. And so when we're talking about our health, if we just look at the very tip that's sticking out of the water, we're going to miss the whole, you know, 99% of what's really going on that makes up our health, or what we call health. The other trick is, to this, is that, say this healthy part right here is having constant headaches. And so we go to the doctor to get our headaches fixed, and the doctor fixes our headaches, and puts us on medication or whatever. And so this problem kind of gets chopped off, the headaches are gone. But then what happens, the iceberg just floats up a little higher. And then there's another layer sticking out of the water too, that's more obvious to be seen. So that all of that is what's involved in our health and why we need to be the ones that are the experts to explain to the people, the health practitioners, or to ourselves, what's what's holding up that little part that's sticking out of the water. There are some good reasons why we might want to consider learning how to take better care of ourselves and learning to understand ourselves better and to understand our health. One real practical reason is that it seems to be important as far as national health care in this country is going. I'm sure Kevin can tell you that it costs a lot of money to go to the doctor. It's getting more and more expensive. Hospitals are going out of business, and the whole healthcare system in our country right now is in bad financial straits, and so is our health insurance. And so I think that the trend is, most people who know about trends say that the trend in healthcare is for people to learn to look at themselves and to take advantage of all the information that's out there about how to be healthy. So you can consider yourself part of the progressive movement. Another benefit of learning to take care of ourselves is that we can learn to see disease or health problems in a different kind of light. We tend to think of headaches, stomach aches, even more serious kinds of physical ailments as problems. And they are annoying, and they are painful, they are inconvenient. But they're also our bodies trying to tell us something. And by looking at health problems, physical problems, in a more positive way, in that what am I trying to tell myself and what can I learn from this, we can often learn a great deal. Usually when we get sick, it's not the illness that's the problem, it's what caused the illness. And the symptoms of the illness are our body trying to pull itself back together. And so, like when we have a cold, to use a mild example, the symptoms of a cold, a cough, runny nose, that's our body trying to heal itself. And the healing process is what's annoying to us. But that's actually what's going on. Also, in learning to take care of ourselves, we're forced, literally, to look at ourselves as whole people. Just like in the iceberg example, we can't just look at our stomach that's hurting, because our stomach is connected to the rest of us, which is connected to our lifestyle and our emotions and the way we look at the world. And so we begin to see ourselves not just as physical bodies, but physical bodies that have souls and minds and emotions and intellect. And it's very easy for us to talk about things like that and to read about things like that. But when we actually have to start dealing with ourselves as whole people because our stomach hurts, it's a very practical exercise in doing that. There are some risks of taking care of ourselves. And I think that we need to understand that. It's very nice to be taken care of in some ways and to not have the responsibility of making our own decisions. Sometimes it's very confusing if you're used to going to see a health practitioner who says, this is your problem and this is the answer, and you say, okay, and go home and probably get better. It's very confusing to go and say, here's three things that might be going on in my opinion, and here's 15 things that might help. What do you think? Well, what am I paying you for? I came to you to ask. So there are some calculated risks in making those decisions ourselves, and there's also some effort that we need to put into educating ourselves and understanding ourselves better. Another risk of taking care of ourselves is that it's easy to blame ourselves. Like I said before, when something goes wrong, we tend to think that we've somehow missed something and that if we just work at it a little harder, we know we won't get sick again. When we blame ourselves that way and start to feel guilty, those emotions just work against us feeling healthy. And so we have to remember that we are human beings, and again, balance the self-responsibility with self-acceptance. Holden is a very interesting place to work as a nurse. I came here out of 2 years of working in a student health center where our main focus was on self-care and wellness, because the staff of the clinic felt like that part of a college education was also learning how to take care of physical ailments, that we would do the students a much bigger service by helping them learn how to take care of a sprained ankle and an ulcer and a stomach ache and a cold and those kinds of things than we would if we just fixed it up for them, which would be very easy to do. It would have been easier to do that. But it seemed an important part of their education, especially leaving college and then going on their own where they couldn't come to the health center all the time, if we would let them know some things they could do. And so when I, also there was a lot of resistance among the students for that kind of a thing, of taking that responsibility and taking care of themselves. And when I thought about coming to Holden, I thought, how wonderful, because Holden has so many values that help us look at ourselves, accept ourselves, and then take responsibility for ourselves. Here we accept each other so easily, more than any place I've ever been. And I know that when I feel that acceptance from the other people in the community, it's much easier for me to accept myself. And that also here we look at people as whole people. We understand, I mean, the community understands that it's important what we eat, it's important how we worship and when we worship, our spirituality. It's important that we have time for exercise and for time alone and for time together and for time with family. And we see people as whole individuals. We don't see people just as worshiping people. We don't see people just as people who are here to enjoy the mountains or whatever, but or to work. But we tend to look at each other as whole individuals, and that helps us then look inside ourselves as whole individuals. And I think that Holden is a hard place to be because of that. Learning to take care of ourselves is really hard, and it really hurts sometimes, and we want to stop and say, I quit. That's why it's hard, I think, for me in some ways to be at Holden, because I can't quit here. There's just a momentum here, and it's built into the philosophy of the community and the way we live our daily lives that we need to keep doing that, and that there's support to keep doing that. And then the other thing about being at Holden is that there's not very much medical care, and that's a real practical reason for being very in tune with how we're feeling and what we can do to take care of ourselves, because it is perhaps not only dangerous to try to take care of a physical problem here, but it can also be just really inconvenient. It is really inconvenient to go out of here to get health care. And so the more we can learn about doing our own things here, the less we have to worry about that kind of inconvenience. Now, how are we supposed to figure all this out? How are we supposed to know all these things? That's a good question. There are lots and lots of resources now for people to learn about themselves and how to take care of themselves. And like I said, it's definitely a national trend, and it certainly is a trend in the healthcare profession. I want to show you some resource books that are available in the village. And this is the one I've already mentioned, Wellness Workbook, and I've asked David to order it for the bookstore, and I really encourage you to look at it and browse through it. It's real easy reading, it's got some good jokes, makes the whole concept real easy to take and real easy to live with. This book is already in the bookstore, Self-Care, Well Care. It's only $3.95, and it explores the whole idea of wellness, and then in the back section actually has some very practical advice on how to deal with various physical problems. This is a book that is much more technical, Medicine for Mountaineering. It's an example of how people who are away from traditional health care learn to deal with medical emergencies and other kinds of ailments on their own. And this is probably the book I use the most of any, one of the books I use the most of anything just in my office. But it's, again, more technical, but real interesting to think about that this is written not for healthcare professionals. This book is on order already. It's not here yet. Chop wood, carry water. Probably seen some people carrying it around. This is much like the wellness workbook in that it is a kind of a workbook, and it sort of takes you through various parts of your life, learning, intimate relationships, sex, family, work, play, healing, technology. But it comes from more of a Zen philosophy point of view, and is a really nice book.
Just out of curiosity, what's the chop water, chop wood, carry water?
It's from a,
just a quote,
chop wood, carry water every day.
Oh.
And the subtitle of the book is A Guide to Finding Spiritual Fulfillment in Everyday Life.
Mm-hmm. So dealing with everyday.
Mm-hmm. And even though it deals mainly with spiritual fulfillment, it certainly talks about how our physical health plays into our spiritual health, which plays into our physical health and keeps coming around. There used to be more of these magazines on the rack, and I guess I have to say that I'm glad they're disappearing, even though I'd like to take them with me when I leave. But if people are liking them so much that they're taking them home, that's fine. This is a great journal, Medical Self-Care. Used to be really radical about 10 years ago, and now they're saying the same things, but people are catching on, so it's not so radical. This is another source that's real easy to take, real easy to read, not complicated. Let me read you some of the articles just in this one. Men's health, women's health, self-medication, self-help. Is this surgery necessary? Food allergies, sports nutrition, just all kinds of things that are really interesting to read. And this one, this magazine is up in the reading area. And the last book I want to talk to you about, I want to show you some examples from the book, just to give you some practical ideas of how you can use some of these sources. This book is called Take Care of Yourself. It's in the bookstore too, A Consumer's Guide to Medical Care. And it has just step one, step two, step three. What do you do? And I want to give you a couple of examples.
You can see how neat it is.
And when someone comes to see me in my office and when they leave, I usually pull out this book and make sure I've told them the right things. So you might find some quotes. You might look at this book and say, wow, that's just what Mary Beth says. It really is the other way around. Ankle injuries. This is for the basketball players, since there are some of you in the group. First, it gives you an explanation of your ankle, what an ankle injury means. The ligaments are involved, the muscles are involved. What's a sprain? What's a strain? Real easy to read. I'm sure that anyone could easily understand it. And then some ideas of what you can do at home. And then some ideas of, if you go to the doctor's office, what can you expect? And that's a question that people ask me so often. Well, what's the doctor going to do? What's the point of going out? What's going to happen when I get there? And I think it's a really good question. So, and the book tells you what is the typical care for this kind of an injury. It also helps you, if you do go to the doctor, you know what to expect, and if that's not happening, you can ask some questions about it. So you have a little bit of an education, and you can be a much wiser consumer of healthcare, and you can get your $35 worth. The best part of this book is
is the flow chart, which is real easy to follow. I'll draw it a little bigger up here. The first thing it asks, the first question, is the ankle deformed? Okay. If it's yes, all you have to know is yes or no, real easy. Then, if it's yes, then see the doctor right now. If it's no, go to box number 2, which also has a question. Has pain prevented the ankle from bearing any weight for more than 24 hours? If the answer is yes, see the doctor in the next couple days. If the answer is no, go to box number 3. Has pain made weight very difficult for more than 72 hours? And then again, yes, see the doctor as soon as you can. No, apply home treatment, which is right here, home treatment. Real easy, and it really is that easy. And the interesting part of it is that this is exactly how the doctor thinks when you go to the doctor's office. If you go to the doctor's office with a sprained ankle, the doctor is in their mind saying, is the ankle deformed? Yes, no, okay, go down to box number 2. I mean, that's exactly how the doctor is thinking. That's how doctors make diagnosis, by yes and no questions, until they get down to the answer that makes sense to them. So I'm going to show you one more, just because I like this book so much.
Do doctors like that book so much?
I don't know. The two doctors that I worked with last year did. There's another one called in addition to this one called Taking Care of Your Child, which I think, you know, the pediatricians and from the town I'm in used.
Mary Beth, do you find doctors pretty encouraging of self-care, or do you find them kind of jealous of their prerogative to make decisions? And
I think that on the whole, from my limited experience, that most physicians are very happy when a patient, when a person comes with some information. I think that on the whole, most physicians are much happier to discuss the situation with an informed person, a person who wants to take an interest. It's much like teaching, I suppose. If the class is bored, it's no fun to teach. If the person who needs care just wants the doctor to fix it, it may not be as interesting, but working, I think most physicians are happy to work in a kind of a corporation or cooperative effort, you know, relationship, rather than, I'll fix it. You tell me what's wrong, and I'll fix it and make it better. Or maybe even, some doctors will tell the patient what's wrong. Of course, there are exceptions to that, but I do think that that's changing. And these days, people can't help but have some information. I mean, if anyone who watches TV gets little health blurbs, and even reads the paper, gets all kinds of information about how to take care of themselves. So I think that physicians and other healthcare practitioners, too, have been really motivated their patients to be more accepting and more understanding of people who are coming with information and coming with some real definite ideas about what they want for their health care.
I guess I was thinking a little bit too of maybe being a little hesitant, because if you treat something or do something, and then for fear you'll go to the doctor and you'll say, oh, you should have never done that, or why did you do that, or you just made it worse. But I guess that's one of those risks, in a sense.
I think it is one of those risks. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to be prepared to disagree with the healthcare professional sometimes, just like we would with the auto mechanic, or just like we would with the painter or any other expert that we ask for advice. The catch with illness is that when we're sick, we're not very assertive. It's hard. We don't feel good. That's why I think it's important to have have an ongoing process of some understanding of ourselves and of our mental health. I think there are still some physicians who are very, very threatened by patients having some idea of what's going on with their bodies and their lives. But I really feel like they're in the minority. I feel real hopeful and happy that most physicians that I've known have been mostly frustrated when patients don't want to take responsibility or interest in themselves.
Think of one thing at a time, and there's four different things to think about. And just follow the chart down. Is there fever? Yes or no? Is there a red streak? Yes or no? Does the boil feel like it has a pocket of fluid? Yes or no? And then it tells you. If you get down to here and you're still saying no, it's okay to do the home treatment. That's okay. You got it. You know, so it's very reassuring. And even, you know, as a nurse and who has had the training, I still, you know, I use this book so often. Many, many times I've already gotten through the whole chart in my own mind or something like it before I get, but I always feel so good to pull this book out and get down there and say, apply home treatment. Okay, that's what I did. And I need that little boost of, yeah, you are thinking about it in the right way. Yeah, you do know what you're talking about. Your intuition is right. That's one of the things I really like about this book so much, is it helps the reader feel confident, and it's pretty hard to make a mistake. And it covers, the one for kids is a lot thicker than this. It covers everything from depression to warts, you know, to diabetes to sprains and sunburn and diaper rash, you know, and ear infections, and it just has everything, sexual problems, stress, tension, and anxiety. It just goes on and on, but most everything that we can come up with. If anyone, this is a little advertisement, but I'll just pass this on. If anyone is really interested in having a copy of this book or the one for kids, I have a mailer from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, which these books, I think, are like $12 or $13 a piece, but Blue Cross Blue Shield makes these books available for only $4.50, which is kind of an interesting concept, isn't it? I think it's part of that national trend. If people are looking up in this book about how to take care of their boil instead of going to the doctor and sending in an insurance claim, Blue Cross Blue Shield is all the better off for it. So I think we will see insurance companies probably being the most encouraging of self-care.
Is that available even if you're not a member of Blue Cross Blue Shield?
Yeah, it's available to, as far as I know, I've ordered several copies for various people from Indiana, from here. Does anybody have any questions?
Is Blue Cross an insurance company?
Mm-hmm. Blue Cross Blue Shield is one of the largest insurance companies in order. I think that from my limited experience and from my reading, I think that physicians and the whole traditional medical system is moving towards a much more holistic care. I think research backs that up so strongly that the medical profession can't ignore it. And I think that two problems have really helped and bring the idea of holistic care to the front. One is alcoholism and all of the research that has been done in that area. This is my personal opinion, now this isn't something I've read. Alcoholism has been given a lot of attention in the last few years, and a lot of research has been done. And the research keeps saying the whole person, you know, okay, we're talking about a disease, but we're talking about a person with a disease. And the successful recovery from that disease has been only a holistic approach. And the second one, in my opinion, which has also gotten a great deal of attention the last few years, are heart disease, cardiac problems, because heart disease is one of the number one causes of death in the United States, It's also been clearly shown to be very closely linked to lifestyle and diet and emotions and how we view the world. And the programs that have, while there have also been great strides in technology as far as cardiac problems such as, you know, heart transplants and those kinds of things, the rehabilitation programs for people who have had heart attacks and heart problems are holistic. They're talking about, you know, diet, exercise, spirituality, stress level, all those kinds of things. So I think that those two diseases have really helped us out a lot. All the research that's been done in those two areas keeps telling us to look at people as whole human beings. And so that I think that, there's then the other answer to your question is that there's also a real glut of specialists in the medical profession right now. There are too many specialists and not enough family practitioners or general practitioners. Family practitioners don't have any problem getting patients. People that do very specialized areas are really scrambling in some urban areas for patients. And that's a kind of scary thing, because what happens is that I think that then some unnecessary specialized treatments get done for financial reasons. I don't think people are quite that cold-hearted, but I think that physicians and big clinics that do specialized treatments, those kinds of things, need to keep going financially. And when they need customers, they need customers. And then we're also seeing a lot of advertising for medical care, which was never seen, you know, except for just the last few years. So I think that the possibility of getting holistic care is definitely out there, but I think that we have to go with some information of our own and some ideas of our own about what we mean by being treated as a whole person. And we have to be willing to accept the fact that maybe I've been extra edgy because I was drinking so much coffee. And that is such a dumb thing, and it was so hard for me to say, okay, maybe that was it. I mean, if I came to see myself, that's the first thing I would say. If you feel edgy, quit drinking so much coffee. And yet to do it myself, I didn't want to make that connection. I didn't want to be a whole person. I wanted to be a split person. I wanted to be a person who was edgy because maybe it was John's fault, or I had too many responsibilities, or, you know, something like that. And I wanted to be a person who could drink as much coffee as I wanted. I wanted to be a split person. And it was very difficult for me. I learned a lesson, a really good lesson, to put those together and to even, you know, want to see myself as a whole person. And that's just a very little example. And so for people who have even, you know, more serious kinds of problems, it's even harder, I think, as individuals for us to understand that even our very serious health problems are related to our whole lives and our whole selves.
That just makes me think of something I've been reading articles on several times recently, this idea that I think the first research was with cancer patients. We're looking back, several people anyway who have worked in this have found that 18 months to 2 years beforehand there was some real stress or some big change in their life. But the question I'm left with is, if there seems to be some relation between that, and you can look back and see that, but what could there be in a preventative way? I mean, if it is found that there may be some relationship between that kind of thing, knowing that, what could you do?
I think that that we can do a number of things. First of all, just knowing that is a big part of it. If we have a crisis, you know, in our lives, then I think it's good for us to know that for the next year or so we're more susceptible to physical illness, and that we need to be extra aware of that. It would sound funny to say, No, I can't. I'm taking extra good care of myself this year because I had a crisis in my life. But in reality, that's what we need to do. And I think I've only heard a person say that once. And I'm not sure I've always said it to myself either, but I think just being aware of the connection is really important.
And I guess learning to handle stress,
mm-hmm.
which would come out of those crisis situations, how would they handle
it? I've said this to some people, and I'll say it again now because I find it so fascinating. At Holden Village, my own personal survey is that when people have been here on a somewhat long-term basis, are getting ready to leave, they almost always get sick. It's almost 100% of the people that I've paid attention to. Not sick bad, but a cold or something. And I kept thinking about that and thinking about it. Finally, I decided that when someone who's been here long term is getting ready to leave, the last 2 weeks or something they're here, I really want to pull back from them because I'm starting to protect myself from that hurt. And so do all of us, I think. And yet the person who's leaving needs more than ever to have hugs and reassurance that they're still going to be remembered and still a part of this community. And what gets you hugs? A cold gets you hugs. When I had a cold, I got so much attention from people. How are you feeling? How are you feeling? It was wonderful. And
you were just going on vacation.
Yeah. And so I think that's just my, like I say, that's my own personal survey, but I think that's just an example of how our physical problems are usually symbolic of something, you know, that's under the water, you know, part of the iceberg that's not showing.
Well, if someone thinks of a more important question, can I ask you a little more unimportant one? Uh-huh. Where does the term chickenpox come from? Because you said you've just been reading up on it. Why is it called chickenpox?
You know, that's a good question.
When I was 13 and chickenpox started, I told Andrew that that's what he gets for helping his grandpa and grandma and their chicken lines too much. I was kidding.
Good.
But at first, you know, yeah.
I know I've read the answer somewhere, but I can't remember it.
I suppose it must have come from something like that, though at one time they thought it was related mm-hmm. or something.
It seems like to me it has something to do with the way the pox look. But I'll have to see if I can't find the answer.
Very unimportant.
I've got a question.
The Danish and Swedish name?
Does that translate chickenpox?
No.
What does it translate?
It doesn't translate. Oh. As far as I know, it's just a name.
In Dutch, I think it's waterfox.
Oh. Oh, that would be easy to understand because that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. Did you have a question, John?
Yeah. After you've made a diagnosis and but you need a prescription. Mm-hmm. And it costs you a doctor's visit to get the prescription. Is there any way of avoiding that? I mean, can you go around a doctor and get medication?
It depends on what the prescription is, but it's a little easier to do now because more and more drugs that have been only available by prescription are becoming available over the counter. Two that come to mind right away are one is Motrin, which is now being marketed as Advil and Nuprin. For inflammation. It's really good for muscle inflammation like sprains and strains, backaches, really great for menstrual cramps. That was a really commonly prescribed medication and it's now available without prescription. And the second one is that comes to my mind is Benadryl, which is an antihistamine. It's used a lot for allergic reactions, things like that. Now I think it's being marketed, I can't remember the marketing name, but it's being marketed for, I think, colds, that kind of thing. But it's really good for all kinds of things. It's a cough suppressant, and it's also available. Benylin is a cough suppressant, which is really Benadryl, that's not a prescription. It stops itching. It's a mild sedative. It does a lot of different things. So it's easier for some things. There's such a variety of drugs, of medications available to a drugstore, that with a little information we can substitute something that would be prescription, you know, for something that would be available over the counter. But if you really need something that has to be available only by prescription, you could see a health practitioner that's not a physician for less money. For example, a nurse practitioner would be one example of that, and go through that way. But unless you know somebody,
right?
In the phone book, you know, just.
And they give out prescriptions.
Yellow pages. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in most, well, in some states, in Washington, they have prescription privileges.
Hmm. That brings a question. I haven't been very acquainted with medical stocks here in the States recently, but are generic drugs, generic, is that what I'm going to say? Are they becoming quite readily available? Because I know there's a tremendous difference in cost.
They are more and more, and when you go for a prescription, you can ask for a generic, the generic brand. And another thing to remember about that is that when your physician writes the prescription, make sure that you ask the physician to put on there that it, can you have the generic brand? Because the pharmacist has to fill what the doctor writes. But the doctor, most prescription pads have a place to check that the generic is okay. Another thing you can do if a physician is giving you a prescription is just, you know, lay it on the line. After all, remember you're a consumer and a customer, as well as a patient. How much does it cost? Is there something cheaper that'll do the same thing? And do you have any free samples that I could have? Could I have part of it in free samples? Because physicians just get overwhelmed with samples of medications, and I get overwhelmed with them here, because a lot of physicians who come to Holden bring free samples of things that drug companies have sent them.
This is just kind of a comment, but it's really scary coming from a small rural community area. When the hospitals are closing down around, and Decorah, which has a population of about 10,000 plus all its surrounding towns, can hardly keep its hospital in business. Mm-hmm. And so they debate about bringing in more of a trauma center, mm-hmm. Make it more of that type of facility, or more specialist, like you said. And I noticed in the past few years, a few more, well, like EMT programs are offered more, and you have the small towns and neighboring communities are getting the ambulances and having the emergency medical trained teams. Because otherwise, you have an 80-mile trip to La Crosse or a 70-mile trip to Rochester to the larger medical facilities, and it's scary. You can think it's positive, you know, maybe people aren't getting sick as much and paying more attention to, you know, their own health and self-care, and you have your medical associates group, or you hear a lot more about HMOs now. Mm-hmm. But it's also very scary when it comes to, you know, deliveries. Mm-hmm. And complications
or emergencies,
and,
yeah.
You know, medical emergencies. It's really scary, because then you're in a more isolated area, and it's just kind of just hanging on in the first floor. Mm-hmm. Literally, it might be closed off because the business is small.
It's the same thing at the hospital in Chelan. It is scary, and the scary time is the transition time, when the communities haven't figured out how to make up that loss of medical care. You know, in between the time when they figure out what to do and have actually put a program into play, hospitals all over are actually arguing about patients. In Chelan, I know that they're really scrambling for patients. They want to keep their doors open, not to make a lot of money, because they'll be happy to break even, but to keep that hospital facility available to that community. And so, for example, their policy is that if a Chelan ambulance picks up a patient, they have to go to Chelan Hospital first to be evaluated. And the temptation is to want to go right to Wenatchee, because it's a much bigger, much better equipped hospital. But they simply cannot afford to run an ambulance service for the hospital in Wenatchee. And it just comes down a lot to finances, and that's a hard that's a hard thing to hear, and it's hard to live with. We've been really spoiled by the convenience of our medical system.